This is Case Closed, crime stories from the golden age of radio. Welcome back to Case Closed, another 60 minutes of old-time radio crime brought to you Wednesdays on RelicRadio.com. We'll hear first today from Dragnet, their episode from September 21st, 1952, titled The Big Shot. After that, it's Nick Carter, Master Detective, and A Cat Brings Death, his episode from April 15th, 1944.
Sound off for Chesterfield. Chesterfield, first cigarette in America to give you premium quality in both regular and king size, brings you Dragnet.
Ladies and gentlemen, the story you are about to hear is true. The names have been changed to protect the innocent. You're a detective sergeant. You're assigned to homicide detail. A nightclub manager has been robbed and killed. The killers made good their escape. Their identity is unknown. Your job, get them.
Dragnet, the documented drama of an actual crime. For the next 30 minutes, in cooperation with the Los Angeles Police Department, you will travel step by step on the side of the law through an actual case transcribed from official police files. From beginning to end, from crime to punishment, Dragnet is the story of your police force in action.
It was Wednesday, April 7th. It was warm in Los Angeles. We were working the day watch out of homicide detail. My partner's Frank Smith. The boss is Thad Brown, chief of detectives. My name's Friday. I was on the way back from R&I, and it was 1:46 p.m. when I got to the interrogation room.
Find anything?
No, they're checking it now. Mm-hmm. Mr. Seaton?
Yes, sir.
I wonder if you'd mind going over all that happened just once more. You might have forgotten something, some little thing that might help us here.
All right. Where do you want me to start? Where I came in this morning?
Yeah, that'll be fine.
Well, I came into work about 8:30.
Is that the time you usually get there?
Yes, sir. It depends what time I catch my bus. Usually it's about then, though.
Mm-hmm. Was Mr. Kelby there then?
Yeah, he usually gets in around 8 or so, comes in, looks the place over. You know, checks the register, liquor supply in the bar, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then he goes to his office to count the money for the night before, get the deposit slip ready for the bank. That's what he was doing this morning when they came in.
You see him come in?
Yeah, I was in the kitchen when those two men came in.
Mm-hmm.
First, I thought they were salesmen. Both of them were dressed kind of nice. A lot of salesmen come in to see Kelby that time in the morning. I didn't figure anything was wrong.
They say anything to you, these men?
Well, no, not at first. They just stood there looking the place over. I went on peeling my potatoes. And then I heard one of them say that he guessed they might as well get it over with, and that's when they pulled the guns and told me it was a stick-up.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Well, first, I didn't know quite what to do. I asked them if they was kidding, not to pull jokes like that. And I told them if it was a joke, it wasn't very funny.
Mm-hmm.
And then the big one came over and told me to keep my mouth shut, told me it wasn't any joke. And if I made a sound, they'd just soon blow my head off his look at me. Well, you just know I wasn't about to cause any trouble.
Did Mr. Kelby know they were in the place?
No, not then. You see, he keeps the door to his office closed when he's counting the money, and I thought about yelling to him, but then when I looked at those two guys, I thought about what they'd said about killing me. I decided not to.
What did these men do then?
The tall one walked over to the door of Mr. Kelby's office and knocked on the door, and Mr. Kelby said for him to come in.
Mm-hmm.
And they opened the door and walked in. He saw the guns, asked them what they wanted. Told them they'd better get out of there with those guns, not to cause any trouble. The little one laughed at him and said they wanted the money and that Kelby was the one who shouldn't cause any trouble.
I see.
Well, the little one started to pick up the money and stuff in his pockets, and Mr. Kelby told him they better leave it alone, that he had friends to take care of him. And the two of them said something I couldn't hear. Little one told Kelby that his friends wouldn't do him any good. And that's when they shot him.
Which one actually shot him?
Oh, the little one. He's the one who said that thing about the friends.
Well, did you try to do anything to help Kelby while all this was going on?
Well, what could I do? I told you what those guys said. Kelby wanted to be a hero, save the money, fine. I wasn't his money. It belonged to the owners. Look, I tell you, Sergeant, money isn't worth that much. They nail you into that box and they don't throw a bank book in. Those guys told me to stay put, I stayed put.
What did these two fellas do after they shot Kelby?
Well, the big one was real surprised, like he didn't know the little one was going to do it. Yelled at him he was a fool, said he was a stupid fool. Those were his exact words. And the little guy finished getting all the money and then they ran out. Well, I'll tell you, I was scared to death they were going to kill me, too. Looked like it for a minute, too.
How do you mean?
Well, when they ran through the kitchen of the back door, a little one stopped and asked what they was going to do about me. I thought, sure, my number was up. The big one said not to make it any worse, to leave me alone. Then they ran out of the place. Boy, that's when I called the cops and those other guys, you know, out there in the car. And then you came. And the rest you know.
Now, you're sure that you've never seen any one of these men before?
Well, sir, I'm pretty sure I haven't.
I wonder if you can give us some kind of a description on these two men.
Yeah, the big one was about 6 feet two, maybe three. Weighed about 180 to 200. Dark. Black curly hair.
Anything special about him? The way he talked? Any scars? Anything like that?
No, nothing.
How was he dressed? Can you remember?
Yeah, he had on a gray suit. Glen plaid. Had kind of red in it, you know. The suit looked expensive. He had black shoes. Maroon tie.
Now, how about the smaller one? What did he look like?
Oh, he was a little one. 5'6" or 7". 130, 35 pounds. He was dark, too. Black hair. Cut real short.
Uh-huh. How about his clothes?
Oh, had on a blue suit. Looked like a gabardine. Single-breasted, light blue. Had on a yellow shirt and dark blue tie.
Would you know if there were any marks or scars on him?
Oh, yeah. He had a little tiny scar right here. On the edge of his mouth.
Uh-huh.
Made him look like he was smiling all the time.
Well, these are very good descriptions, Mr. Seaton. They're going to help us a lot here.
Yeah, well, like I said, I wasn't about to be a hero and try to stop these two, but I knew that you'd want to know what they looked like, so I tried to get all the dope I could.
We understand. Now, during the holdup, did either of these men use any names? One of them call the other by a name, anything like that?
Oh, let me think about that. Yeah. Yeah, there was something. While they were in the office, while the little guy was picking up the money, the big one said, "Hurry up, Deuce." Yeah, he called him Deuce.
That was a smaller one?
Uh-huh, that's right, Deuce.
Joe?
Yeah.
I'll ask the stats office to make a run on the descriptions and MO for us. Check the oddity and the Monica file in the R&I office and see if they can come up with a deuce or anything on the scar.
I'll be fine, fine. Thanks a lot.
Hey, you got a cigarette, Sergeant?
Yeah. There you go.
Thanks. Yeah, how about a match?
Sure. Here.
Thanks. Yeah, it's a terrible thing. You know, Kelby being shot, I'll probably lose my job.
How's that?
I'll probably lose my job. The owners will figure, sure, I should have tried to stop those guys. Well, those are the breaks.
You said that when these men came in, the door to the manager's office was closed. Is that right?
Oh, yes, sir. Mr. Kelby always kept it closed when he counted the money, just like I said.
Uh-huh. Well, then it looks like the men knew that Kelby would be checking the money at that time, doesn't it? That they knew the layout of the place when they came in.
Yeah, you know, I never thought of that. By gosh, that's what must have happened. They sure seemed to know what was going on.
Anybody else that was usually around at that time, would you know? Anybody that might have known that the manager worked the accounts at that particular time?
No, there's nobody else around. But I don't think that Mr. Kelby kept it a secret about the money.
Was Kelby conscious at all after he was shot? Do you remember that?
Not more than a minute. I ran over to him right after the man left. I wanted to see if I could help, you know.
Okay.
Yeah, he was shot pretty bad. They'd hit him in the stomach. He was all doubled up. Terrible. He looked up at me and said, "I know." And his voice kind of trailed off. That's all. Just, "I know."
Stats office is making the run, Joe. We got out the local and the APB on the suspects. Nothing that matches the name Deuce and nothing on the scar.
Anything from the crime lab yet?
No. Checked by the office. While I was there, Murphy called from Georgia Street.
Anything?
Yeah, not good.
What?
Kelby died, never regained consciousness.
With the death of the victim, any information he might have given us about his killers was gone. The one witness to the murder was shown the mug books but was unable to identify the suspects. Sergeants Gillen Cenas and Danny Galindo canvassed the neighborhood and came up with the driver of a bakery truck who thought he'd seen the killers leave the club. He told them that two men answering the description given us had walked out of the club and gotten into a late model Mercury sedan. He'd not been able to get the license number of the car, however. He was brought into the office and shown the mug books, but he was unable to point out the killers for us. In checking the neighborhood, Encinas and Galindo had come up with a waitress who had seen two men answering the description of the killers loitering around the area. She also described the Mercury sedan, but said that she hadn't paid much attention to it. Because of the smoothness with which the holdup men had operated, indications led us to believe that they had been tipped off by somebody working for the club. Proceeding with this theory, we checked with the club owner, a Mr. John Watson. We found him in the kitchen of his home.
Hope you don't mind if I finish up here, officer.
No, not at all, Mr. Watson.
Guess it seems a little silly to you for a man to be in the kitchen. Kind of a hobby of mine, cooking.
Yes, sir.
Making a cheesecake. Got some friends coming over tonight. Figured a cheesecake might taste good later in the evening.
Yes, sir. You go right ahead. We just have a few questions we'd like to ask you.
About the robbery? Terrible thing. I don't understand why Kelby just didn't give him the money. Not give him any reason to shoot.
Do you have any idea who might have known that the money would be in the office at the time?
And almost everyone that worked in the place, not making mention of the salesman that came in. Would you hand me that rolling pin over there?
Yeah, here you are.
Thanks. Crust to a cheesecake's important. That's one of the reasons I make it myself. Can't stand a soggy crust.
Are there any of your employees that you think might do a thing like this?
Well, that'd be hard to say. I didn't get around the club much. Once in a while, I'd drop by, chat with Kelby. He did the hiring and firing. As long as the place made money, I didn't interfere.
Well, the way it looks, it could be very likely that one of the employees did it. The men who pulled the job seem to know just what they were doing.
That right?
Yes, sir.
I wonder if we could look through your employment records.
Sure, of course. Anything I can do to help out in this thing. Would you hand me that pan over there?
Where? This one?
Yeah. Thanks. Get this crust into it and the cheesecake's about ready. Yeah, sure, you can look at the records. Don't see what that's going to show, but you're welcome to them.
What kind of a car do you drive, Mr. Watson?
New Lincoln. Just got it a couple of weeks ago.
Any of your employees drive a late model Mercury that you might know of?
No. Like I said, I don't really have a lot to do with the actual operation of the club. Kelby took care of that. Good manager. Did a fine job.
Can you tell us how much money they took, sir?
No, near as we can tell, it came to a little over $1,100. Some of that was in checks, you know, that we cashed for our customers. Well, that finishes that. Get this together. Now, get it in the oven. Looks good, doesn't it?
Yes, sir.
You should taste it. Set it for 350 for 25 minutes, and that does it. Yeah. Now then, can I get you officers anything? A cup of coffee, something like that?
No, sir. If you just arrange for us to check your employment records.
Certainly. I'll call the club right away.
We'd appreciate that.
My brother-in-law's down there looking after things now. He's an idiot. Never could get a job on his own. I only hired him because my wife insisted on it. Yeah, he'd probably botch up the whole thing. Usually does.
Well, if you'd call him, sir.
How's Kelby's condition? Going to be laid up long?
Well, Mr. Kelby's dead, sir. We thought you knew.
No, I hadn't heard. Oh, I can hardly believe it. Such a ruthless thing. Just terrible. Kelby was such a good man. Everybody that worked for him liked him. Didn't have an enemy in the world.
He had two. We went back 5 years into the employment records of the club. There were over 200 names. Each of them had to be checked out. Frank and I spent 2 months running them down. In all instances, the people interviewed had alibis or else they could explain their action at the time of the robbery and killing. In each instance, if the person owned an automobile, it was checked. A broadcast and an APB had been gotten out on the late model Mercury seen at the club, but there had been no answers. No replies had come in on the descriptions of the two suspects. June 17th, we were checking out the last three names on the list. One of the three, a David Adams, listed a rooming house on West 34th Street as his home address. We checked with the landlady, a Mrs. Elvia Collins.
Adams? Sure, he lives here, second floor front.
I wonder if we could talk to him, ma'am.
Sure, I've got no reason to say you can't. Come in.
Thank you, ma'am.
He isn't in right now. Went out about an hour ago. Said he had a lead on a job, and I sure hope he gets it. He's a couple of months behind in his rent.
That's right.
Sit down. Just take any chair.
Thank you, Miss Collins.
You officers like anything? Mint on the table there. Help yourself.
No, thank you. Adams give you any idea when he might be back?
No, he didn't say right out. I expect he'll be here by 6.
How's that, ma'am?
That's when we serve dinner. Mr. Adams hasn't missed more than 4 meals since he's been living here.
What's this Adams look like?
Oh, little man. Sort of like my first husband, little dried-up man.
How old would you say he is?
Well, I know exactly. He baked his birthday cake last Wednesday. 46 candles and one for luck.
About how tall would you say, ma'am?
5'6" or so.
How about his weight?
Maybe 120, and that'd have to be soaking wet. He's a real little man.
Is he dark or light?
I beg your pardon?
His hair, is it dark or light?
Oh, light. A real silky hair, what little there is left of it. Funny the way he combs it. Never could figure it out why a man would comb his hair that way.
What's that, ma'am?
Well, you see, he's only got a little bit of hair on one side. He lets it grow real long, and then he combs it all the way over the top of his head so it'll look like he's got a lot of hair. He really doesn't, though. It's silly. He's pretty vain about other things, too.
Does he have any friends in the building, Miss Collins?
Well, there's his two cousins. They've moved, though.
How long ago did they move?
Well, let's see. Must have been about 2-3 months ago. Yes, that much, anyway.
Well, what did these two cousins look like, Miss Collins? Can you describe them?
Well, you just bet I can. I had a lot of trouble with them, too. Always drinking. First one, he was a big one. 6 feet, anyway. Had dark hair. Weighed maybe 200 pounds.
Miss Collins, how about his complexion?
Dark.
Anything outstanding about him?
Well, now, what do you mean, outstanding?
Well, I mean anything about him that struck you as being different, maybe. Anything that attracted your attention, something like that?
No.
What about the number two man? How old was he?
Well, he was a little younger. 35, or maybe 37, around there.
Now, how tall would you say he was, Miss Collins?
Well, he was a little man. 5'6" or 7".
How much do you figure he weighed, would you know?
130 pounds or so.
How about his complexion?
Dark, just like the other one.
Anything outstanding about him? Scars, tattoos, maybe anything like that?
Yes, he had a scar. Right on the corner of his mouth. Made him look like he was smirking all the time. It was a real dirty look.
What are these men's names, Miss Collins?
Well, now the big one is called Al Evans.
Uh-huh.
The little one's name was Bill Evans. They was brothers.
Did they have a car?
Oh, yes, a late one. It was real pretty.
You know what make it was?
No. No, I'm sorry, but I can't tell one kind from another. Sure was a nice looking one, though. A lot of chrome all over it.
Do you have any idea where they might be now, where they moved to?
No, I haven't. Well, Mr. Adams can probably tell you, though.
I see.
Oh, that might be him now. I'll see.
Oh, we'll go with you, ma'am, all right?
Are you expecting any trouble? What's this all about, anyway? Mr. Adams done something wrong? Oh, I do hope not. He's a little man, but he's awfully nice.
We'd just like to talk to him.
Oh, I sure hope they won't be any trouble. Oh, Mr. Adams.
Yes, Miss Collins?
These gentlemen would like to talk to you.
Oh? Something I can do for you?
Are you David Adams?
Yes, sir, that's right.
We're police officers, Mr. Adams. My name's Friday. This is my partner, Frank Smith.
How do you do? Adams. What is it you wanted?
Well, it might be better if we talked in your room.
All right, but I still don't see what it is you want.
Did you get the job?
No, Mrs. Collins, but I've got another lead. Don't worry, I'll be able to take care of that matter by the first next week.
Oh, it's all right, Mr. Adams. I understand.
This is it. Not much. Sit down anywhere.
Thank you.
You want to tell me what this is all about now? What it is that you want with me?
Well, we'd like to talk to you about the robbery of the Pink Rat Cafe last April. Manager was killed.
The Pink Rat, yes. I worked there a couple of years ago, but I don't think I've been in the place since then. I lost the job. Kelby fired me for dropping a load of dishes.
Did you have an argument at the time?
Well, a little one, yeah. I was sore. He was, too. Wanted me to pay for the dishes. I didn't feel it was my fault. I told him so. He had a few words. Nothing serious, though. Why?
Mr. Kelby was killed in the holdup at the bar.
Yes, I know. That's too bad. But you surely don't think I had anything to do with that, do you?
Well, that's what we're trying to find out.
Why do you think I'd have anything to do with it? I haven't been near the place for a couple of years.
Well, the way the thing was pulled, the whole M.O. makes it look like it's an inside job. Somebody had to give the layout, tell him that Kelby would be in his office with the money at that time. It all points to somebody that either works there now or who did work there.
Yes, but why me?
Well, your name was on the list. It had to be checked out.
Adams, you got any relatives in town?
Not now. I had a couple of cousins. They were out here for a while.
What are their names?
Al and Bill Evans.
Mind if we look around your room?
No, I got nothing to hide. Go ahead and look around. You won't find anything.
Thanks.
What is it about my cousins? You figure they had something to do with the thing?
Well, we think they might have. Their descriptions match the ones we got from the witnesses.
You've been talking to old Mrs. Collins. She's the one who told you about Alan Bell, isn't she?
Well, who told us isn't important, Adam?
You don't have to admit it. I know. You're a busybody, always getting your nose into somebody else's business. Oh, harpy.
Joe.
Yeah?
Look at here.
What's this gun for, Adams?
You never know when somebody's going to try to break into the house. It's protection, that's all.
Mm. You never had it out of the house, huh?
Not since I bought it. It's the .32, though. What are you so interested for? Kelby was killed with a .38. Well, he was, wasn't he? Seems to me I heard it on the radio or read it in one of the papers.
No, you didn't. The caliber of the gun that killed him wasn't released. How'd you know?
I must have read it in the paper, like I said.
No, this won't work, mister. I think maybe we better talk to you downtown, huh?
You going to arrest me?
Just like to talk to you downtown. Let's go.
Well, sure, but I got nothing to hide.
Well, you still got to come up with an explanation for knowing about that gun.
Description we got matches your cousin's. You know about the gun. You got a lot to explain.
I don't want to go to jail.
Too bad, Adams. You should have thought about that before you got involved in this.
Well, if I tell you, if I help you get the guys that did it, will you give me a break?
Well, we can't make any deals.
Well, I don't want to go to jail. You can't do anything for me, huh?
All we can do is see that the district attorney's office knows that you've helped.
But you'll tell him, huh? If I give you a hand?
He'll know about it.
Okay. I got claustrophobia putting me in a cell and drive me nuts. I tell you who did the job. More than that.
Yeah.
I can show you the gun they used.
You are listening to Dragnet, the authentic story of your police force in action.
Listen to what the nation's press has had to say about Chesterfields.
Atlantic City Evening Union. Wholesalers and retailers report an extraordinary demand for Chesterfields in both sizes, with sellouts in many instances.
Cleveland Press. Dealers everywhere report the big pack sale phenomenal. Last week in Cleveland, some areas reported the long size Chesterfield outsold all other brands.
And from all over the country, we're getting reports from dealers telling us no product they ever handled has grown so fast in so short a time as king-size Chesterfields.
Yes, with a buying public today, high quality for the money is a must. And that's why so many smokers are changing to Chesterfield. First cigarette in America to give you premium quality in both regular and king size. King size Chesterfield is exactly the same as regular Chesterfield, except it's larger. Contains so much more of the same tobacco, it gives you a 21% longer smoke, yet costs very little more.
And the tobacco in king size Chesterfield is of better quality and higher price than the tobacco in any other king size cigarette.
Try Chesterfield. Either way you like them, regular or king size, they're much milder. Chesterfield gives you the best possible smoke.
We took David Adams back to the office and checked the gun with pawn shop records. It was clean. We printed him and checked him through R&I. We took him over to Westlake Park and he showed us the approximate place in the lake where the gun had been thrown. He explained that his two cousins had talked him into helping them with the robbery of the club. He also said that as soon as he found out that there'd been a shooting, he'd washed his hands of the entire affair and told them that he'd have nothing more to do with it. The loot from the robbery had been divided between the two cousins, Adams taking no part of it. It took us 2 hours of searching before we were able to find the gun. It was turned over to Russ Camp in ballistics. He fired test shots from the gun, and comparison with the death bullet showed that it was the murder weapon. Markings on the shell casing found at the scene of the crime were the same as those left on the test casing. Adams told us that Bill Evans owned a late model Mercury sedan and that the two brothers had left for St. Louis in the car. He also was able to give us the license number. We checked with DMV and they told us that the legal owner was a finance company on Crenshaw. The manager there told us that their payments were up to date. They were able to give us a St. Louis address used as a reference by Bill Evans. We called the St. Louis Police Department, gave them a rundown, and asked them to pick up the Evans brothers for us. The witness to the killing was unable to identify David Adams as one of the holdup men. He was taken to the main jail and booked on suspicion of 287 PC. Frank and I waited for word from the St. Louis Police Department.
They're all the same, aren't they, Joe?
What do you mean?
I put any of them in a tight spot, and they'll spill all I know to save their skins.
Well, seems that way, doesn't it?
Adams seems pretty sincere, though. Seems like he does really want to help.
Well, we'll know more when we hear from St. Louis.
You figure that Adams is telling the truth?
I don't know. The story seems to check out about how he laid the thing out for him, showing us where the gun was. Being that far back in his room, Rand, it'd make that part about him not taking any of the money fit. I'll get it. Homicide, Friday. Yeah, I'll take it. Mello. Yeah. Yeah, we've been waiting to hear from you. Did you pick up the Evans brothers? Uh-huh. Yeah, wait a minute. Toss me that pad, will you, Frank?
Yeah, here.
Thanks. Yeah, all right, go ahead. Uh-huh. What was that again? I didn't... Yeah, I got it. Okay, thanks. Anything we can do for you, give us a call. Yeah, sure, we sure appreciate it. Right, bye.
What does it?
What do you mean? St. Louis checked the address. They'd been there all right, but they left this morning.
Any idea where they went?
Yeah, the Evans boys told us.
Huh?
They left a forwarding address. Motel out on Ventura Boulevard. Frank and I notified Captain Lorman of the new developments. We talked to the manager of the motel, and she told us that she did have a reservation for June 24th under the name Evans. She told us that they'd be in Cottage 12. In view of the fact that the suspects had not been alarmed, we decided not to put out an APB on the car. We felt reasonably sure that having made the reservations, they'd keep them. But in the event the suspects arrived earlier than expected, a surveillance was placed on the motel 24 hours a day. Sergeants Howard Hudson and Bill Cummings took the period from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. Frank and I covered the other 12 hours. Directly across from the motel was a used car lot. We talked to the manager, and he gave us permission to sit in any one of his cars while keeping the place under surveillance. As we relieved each other, the police car was taken back to the city hall, so there would be no indication that the place was staked out. 4 days passed. No sign of the suspects. June 23rd, 4:32 a.m.
Joe.
Yeah, Mercury sedan. License checks. Two men.
Stopping at the manager's cottage. They're ringing the bell.
Yeah. Looks like they're signing the register.
It must be. There. She's giving him the key.
All right, let's let him get to the cottage. We told her we would.
All right.
And there's the landlady's signal. Let's go.
Right.
You're going to have to move your car.
Huh?
You got to move your car. Put it in the back.
What do you want? Stand up. Hey,
Bill.
Come, Bill!
Hey, Joe, get the other one.
Yeah.
Get away from the cop. Leave me alone.
All right, give it up, mister.
I'm getting out. You got any brains here? Don't try to stop me.
You're going no place, mister. You can't get over that wall. Throw that gun out of here. You haven't got a chance.
Doctor, Arthur, you'll never take me.
All right, hold it up, Evans.
I got no gun. Get a doctor for me, huh? Gonna hurt.
Yeah, we'll call one.
You didn't have to shoot, did you? Lousy deal, you didn't have to shoot.
You didn't give me much choice, mister.
I wasn't trying to hit you, just trying to scare you, that's all. And when I hit you, I'm a good shot. I knew what I was doing.
Yeah, you proved you're a good shot.
What do you mean?
When you killed Kelby.
The story you just heard was true. The names were changed to protect the innocent.
On October 4th, trial was held in Superior Court, Department 87, City and County of Los Angeles, State of California. In a moment, the results of that trial. Nose, throat, and accessory organs not adversely affected by smoking Chesterfields. First such report ever published about any cigarette.
Yes, and it applies only to Chesterfield. A responsible consulting organization has reported the results of a continuing study by a competent medical specialist and his staff on the effects of smoking Chesterfield cigarettes. A group of people from various walks of life was organized to smoke only Chesterfields. For 6 months, this group of men and women smoked their normal amount of Chesterfields, 10 to 40 a day. 45% of the group smoked Chesterfields continually from 1 to 30 years, for an average of 10 years each. At the beginning and at the end of the 6 months period, each smoker was given a thorough examination, including X-ray pictures, by the medical specialist and his assistants. The examination covered the sinuses as well as the nose, ears, and throat. The medical specialist, after a thorough examination of every member of the group, stated, quote, "It is my opinion that the ears, nose, throat, and accessory organs of all participating subjects examined by me were not adversely affected in the 6 months period by smoking the cigarettes provided," unquote. Now remember this Chesterfield report. It's the first such report ever published about any cigarette.
Nose, throat, and accessory organs not adversely affected by smoking Chesterfields.
Buy Chesterfield either way you like them, regular or king size. Chesterfield gives you the best possible smoke.
William M. Evans and Alfred T. Evans were tried and convicted of murder in the first degree. They received life sentences in the state penitentiary. Because David R. Adams had turned state's evidence, and since he was not actually involved in the crime, in the interest of justice, the charges against him were dismissed and he was released from custody. This program is dedicated to the 59th Annual Conference of the International Association of Chiefs of Police held in Los Angeles this week. You have just heard Dragnet, a series of authentic cases from official files. Technical advice comes from the Office of Chief of Police W.H. Parker, Los Angeles Police Department. Technical advisors Captain Jack Donahoe, Sergeant Marty Wynn, Sergeant Vance Brasher. Heard tonight were Ben Alexander, Virginia Gregg, Jack Crucian. Script by John Robinson. Music by Walter Schumann. Hal Gibney speaking.
These great programs sound off for Chesterfield. Radio, Dragnet, The Dean Martin and Jerry Lewis Show. And every weekday, Arthur Godfrey time. On television, Dragnet, Gangbusters, Arthur Godfrey and his friends in the Perry Como Show.
Tomorrow, you'll want to sound off for Chesterfields. Because either way you like them, regular or king size, Chesterfield gives you the best possible smoke.
Chesterfield has brought you Dragnet, transcribed from Los Angeles.
NBC, the National Broadcasting Company.
What's the matter? What is it?
Another case for Nick Carter, Master Detective.
Yes, it's another case for that most famous of all manhunters, the detective whose ability at solving crime is unequaled in the history of detective fiction. Nick Cotter, Master Detective. Tonight's curious adventure...
A Cat Brings Death. For Nick Cotter and the Mystery of the Missing Persian.
Confounded, doggone things to have.
Riley, you don't seem very happy to see me this morning.
I ain't.
Something I've done, or just things in general?
Things in particular.
Here's your glass of water, Lieutenant.
All right. What'd you get it so cold for?
Lieutenant, it ain't...
All right. Get out. Now, where'd I put them pills?
Taking your vitamins regularly, I see. Excellent idea for anyone inclined to be nervous.
Vitamins, nothing. Them's aspirin tablets for headaches.
Lieutenant Riley, do you mind if I sit down this lovely morning?
Sit down, but don't bother me. I've got too many troubles of my own to be bothered with yours.
But I have no troubles, Lieutenant. I feel free as a bird.
You would.
Care to tell old Uncle Nick what the trouble is?
In case you're interested, Mr. Nicholas Carter...
No, I am.
Shut up if you want to hear this.
Oh, sorry. Please forgive
me. In case you're interested, I just had to release Cully Greer from his temporary residence in my jail.
Oh.
I couldn't get enough on him to hold him for a jury in spite of the fact that every cop in town knows he's guilty. And we've been trailing his sidekick, Sabin, for more than a week steady without a sign of results. The same with that blonde, what do you call her, Reba Dawes. We're right back where we started. Three smooth jobs full this month without a smell of a clue. Three big jewel robberies and my little Boy Scouts are still out chasing rainbows.
You know, Riley, I haven't been following this case very closely. But I have a hunch.
Hunch? You can't hold a crook on a hunch. There's been enough high-class sparklers lifted around here in the last 30 days to stock a pawn shop. And we can't put a finger on nobody. Now, you got a hunch. You can't
I
hold
know,
a...
I know, Riley. I know. You can't hold a crook on a hunch. You got to pin something on him and make it stick. I've heard you say that before.
Well, it's true. Why, Nick, I ain't even
had... The Lieutenant.
All right. Lieutenant Riley, Police Headquarters.
This is Commissioner Clark, Riley.
Oh, yes, sir, Commissioner.
Now, look, if somebody doesn't turn up something on these jewel robberies pretty quick now, there's going to be some changes around here.
We've been working hard on it, Commissioner, and I ain't hardly been home long enough to eat, sir. That's a fact, sir.
The trouble with you, Riley, is in your head, not in your stomach. Maybe we need some new blood in that department.
Oh, now, Commissioner, we can't find clues when there ain't none to find. We're doing all we can.
You'll have to do better. I expect results within 48 hours. Goodbye.
Goodbye, Commissioner.
Commissioner.
You take it. Oh, look, Nick, couldn't you go someplace else for a while?
Why, Riley, your lack of hospitality amazes me. I only came down to... the buzzer, Lieutenant.
All right. Well, what is it now? More trouble?
There's a woman out here demanding to see you. And I mean demanding.
I ain't receiving visitors today.
You'd better be. It's Mrs. Dudley Banks herself.
Mrs. Dudley Banks?
You know. Commissioner's favorite aunt.
I know who she is. What did she want? Some more contributions
she's
for
the... She's been robbed, Lieutenant.
Robbed? Oh, don't tell me we got another case to break. I can't stand much more of it. All right, send her in.
You know, Riley, I remember reading recently that Mrs. Dudley Banks had the finest collection of rubies in the country.
No, Nick. Not rubies.
You don't suppose that
Mrs. Dudley Banks, Lieutenant Riley.
Lieutenant Riley, I have come to you personally to report a most distressing thing. I've been robbed in broad daylight and under the most distressing circumstances.
You've been robbed?
Most certainly have, and I shall expect you to take immediate action.
You can depend on us, Mrs. Dudley Banks. What was the nature of your loss?
My cat.
Your cat? You said your cat?
Precisely, my cat. A lemon-colored Persian of the female sex. She's known as Fluffy. She disappeared from my upstairs living room sometime this morning.
Really, isn't it just possible that the cat just strayed off the premises like...
Fluffy was stolen, of that I am certain. She's not given to wandering away.
Yes, of course, ma'am. What do you expect me to do?
Do? Why do you suppose I came down here for sympathy?
Well,
I expect you to recover the animal, apprehend the criminal, and punish him.
Oh, sure.
I shall be home after 4 o'clock. At that time, you will be at liberty to inspect the premises. You have my address, of course. Good day.
Cat.
Persian cat. Of all the confounded nonsense!
Oh, but Riley, think how lucky you are that it wasn't her rubies.
Lucky, you call it?
Well, Lieutenant, what are you going to do about this, pardon my pun, catastrophe?
Do about it, as if I didn't have enough troubles now. That old cluck may be the commissioner's favorite aunt, but if she thinks I'm going to assign anybody to round up a stray cat, she's a
lucky... You know, Riley, this case interests me.
What?
Yes. Why, a case like this might develop some startling angles before we get through with it.
Oh, Nick, quit your kidding.
No, really, Riley, I'm serious. This, I feel sure, is a case worthy of my talents. It'll be a pleasure for me to turn from the pursuit of murderers and other such small-time criminals to the really important work of discovering who walked off with the lovely feline pet of Mrs. Dudley Banks.
Are you kidding, Nick?
Definitely not, Riley. At 4 o'clock this afternoon, I shall ring Mrs. Dudley Banks' bell, wipe my feet on a doormat, hand my hat to the butler, and see what I can uncover about the mystery of the missing Persian.
Go!
So long, Lieutenant. I'm from police headquarters. Lieutenant Riley sent me to investigate the loss of Mrs. Dudley Banks' cat.
Oh, yes, sir. Mrs. Dudley Banks is expecting you. Come in, please.
Thank you.
This way, please. Mrs. Dudley Banks is in her sitting room.
Thank you.
A police person, madam.
A police person?
Yes, madam. About the cat, madam.
Oh, yes, of course. Come in. That would be all, Carrington.
My name is Carter, Mrs. Dudley Banks. Lieutenant Riley sent me here to see if I can find your cat.
To see if you can find her. You must find her.
Oh, that's what I mean, madam. Now, will you please tell me what you know about her disappearance?
There's very little to tell. I was obliged to be absent from the house this morning for about 2 hours. I left my poor Fluffy right here in her own little basket. It's that one there with the pink ribbons on it.
Yes. Now, who was here in the house while you were gone?
My butler and my maid were both here, but neither of them paid the slightest attention to poor Fluffy. It was not until I myself returned at noon that she was missed.
She was a lemon-yellow-colored Persian, I believe.
Yes, a beautiful little creature. Here, let me show you her picture.
Oh, I don't think that'll be necessary.
Not necessary? That's absurd. Surely you can find her more easily when you know what she looks like.
Very well, madam, if you insist.
Oh, of course I insist. Here. Now, this one was taken about 2 months ago. It's not a very good picture because the stupid photographer sent his assistant instead of coming himself.
Oh, I see. Well, a very pretty cat, isn't it? She?
She is. That picture doesn't do her justice.
Now, what happened when you discovered she was missing?
I was brokenhearted.
No, I mean, did you look for her?
What a silly question. Of course we looked for her. Searched the whole house thoroughly, but Fluffy was gone.
Has she ever run away before?
I should say not. She has gone.
I see. Madam, this is a very baffling case. There are a number of angles. Are you sure nothing else is missing beside the cat?
Nothing. We checked everything.
And there were no visitors this morning while you were out?
No one. No one except the young woman from the ladies' auxiliary, of course.
Ah. What did she come here for?
Every Wednesday afternoon, my friends and I meet here to roll bandages. This young woman comes the day before to bring us the material.
She's been coming here regularly?
Every week.
Do you know her name?
I believe this young lady's name is Miss Conroy. She took over the job only last week.
Oh. She hasn't been here before last week, huh?
No, another girl did it before that. But, why are you asking all these questions about her? Surely you can't think she had anything to do with it.
You never can be sure, madam.
Sweet girl. A blonde with beautiful green eyes, just like my poor dear
father. Yes. Well, thank you, Mrs. Dudley Banks. I'll be getting back to headquarters now.
You mean you've solved the mystery of dear Fluffy's disappearance?
Perhaps. Will you have your butler show me out, please?
Oh, yes, of course. Carrington.
Yes, madam.
Show Mr. Carter out.
Yes, madam. This way, sir.
Good day, Mrs. Dudley Banks. Thank you, Carrington.
Not at all, sir. Good day.
This may produce results after all.
This is the headquarters of the Ladies Auxiliary.
This is the office of Brown, Brown, White, and Brown Attorneys.
Yes?
Could you give us the address of a Miss Conroy who works with you? We have a legal communication for her.
Miss Conroy? One moment, please.
Stranger things have happened.
Miss Conroy lives at 76 East Dover Place.
Thank you.
Not at all.
Driver, why are you stopping here?
Well, this is the address you give me, mister.
This is 76 East Dover Place?
Well, it's as near as I can get to it.
But this is an empty lot.
I can't help that, mister. It's 76 East Dover Place, just the same.
Oh. Okay. Take me to the Mayflower Restaurant at 56 and 34th.
Right.
You're a little early for dinner tonight, Mr. Carter. Nobody gets in here before 6, generally.
Now, never mind, Katie. Bring me a nice, thick slab of roast beef.
Oh, you're just fooling, Mr. Carter. This is Meatless Tuesday.
Oh, yes, so it is, Katie. I never seem to remember that. Well, what's on the menu?
Here, you can look for yourself. If you had to buy meat for a family the way I do, you'd remember. It's a job getting things these days.
Yeah, I suppose it is.
Why, just this afternoon, before I come to work, I went to the butcher shop to get some liver. My husband calls it cat food, but he eats it just the same. Well, I got some, and a nice piece it was, too, but I had to fight for it.
Fight for it?
Yeah, blonde little chit tried to get it away from me. Last piece there was, but I got it. I slapped her face, too, I did. And she didn't want it for herself at all. Wanted it for a cat, imagine.
Her cat? What kind of cat?
What's the difference what kind of a cat it was? The idea of hard-working folks having to go without... so some cat can eat the best there is.
This blonde, she wouldn't be young and pretty, would he? Lives in the neighborhood, maybe?
Oh, she's pretty to look at. But the language she uses, it'll make your hair curl. Yeah, she lives around here. I've seen her going in and out of the Mecca Apartments across the park. She's a movie actress, maybe.
Mecca Apartments,
huh? Mm-hmm.
Well, I wonder if she's home now.
Here, don't you want any dinner? I thought you'd come in here to eat.
Oh, sorry, Katie. I'll be back later. Right now, I have to follow a hunch and see a girl about a cat. So long. Prima Donna. Name on the door as big as life. Hey. That's the young lady Riley's been trying to pin something on for the past few weeks, if I recall correctly. Well, Nick, let's see what happens.
Well?
Very well, thanks.
Here, what's the idea of pushing into my apartment like that?
Well, just dropped in to say hello.
What do you want here?
Kitty was right. You are good looking.
Listen, fella, if you don't clear out of here, I'll...
Pretty cat you got there, too. Persian, isn't it?
Never mind the cat. What's the game? Come on, talk up or get out.
All right, here it is. You call yourself Conroy, get to be a worker for the Ladies' Auxiliary, get chummy with Mrs. Dudley Banks, and then walk off with her pet Persian under your raincoat. What's the answer?
Oh, a dick, are you?
Could be. I think Lieutenant Riley would like to have a chat with you down at headquarters.
Lieutenant Riley had me down at headquarters and had to let me go. He's got nothing on me.
Then you won't have to worry, will you? We'll go down and confer with him anyway. We'll take Fluffy along with us.
You let that cat alone. I'm not leaving here for you or anyone else.
No. Mrs. Dudley Banks didn't like the idea of you taking her. You better answer that. It's somebody I'd like to see and be yourself. I don't want to have to get rough. Watch yourself. I'll be right behind these curtains watching you.
Oh, Scully, it's you.
Sure it's me, babe. Who'd you expect?
Oh, I don't know. I just...
What's the matter, babe? You look scared.
No, I'm not scared.
You ready to travel? We're rolling tonight.
Scully,
Say, you did a nice job getting us the layout of the old lady's place. I'm proud of you. You know, that lady's auxiliary racket worked out okay. Me and Sabin turned the trick in no time. The wall safe was a pipe to crack, and we cleaned it. We put the maid and the old lady to sleep and dumped them in the closet. They never got a squint at us at all. We had to get rough with the butler. The old coot tried to make a getaway. Yeah, we had to give him the works.
Scully,
Say, are you sick or something?
I got something to tell you. There's a dick behind the curtain.
Both of you. Turn around and keep your hands in sight. Get him up, Scully.
Now, let's see if you're carrying a gun.
What the...
Just keep him up, Scully. And you too, Reba. I'm not pointing this gun of mine at you for exercise. Oh, no gun, huh? What's the matter?
Don't you wish I had one? And you could pull me for carrying a concealed weapon. Nothing doing, copper. I don't carry any hardware outside of business hours, see? Hey, what are you doing here anyhow?
Just been waiting around for you to show up.
Hey, look, babe. How come this dick's parked here in your place?
I tried to tell you, Scully. He just busted in on me just before you came.
Must have had some reason for busting in.
Well, never mind that now, Scully. Let's all go down and see Riley. He should have held you in jail a little longer today. It would have queered the job you just pulled at Mrs. Dudley Banks' residence. Well, that's the answer to my problem, anyhow. Now, just stand there, you two, while I give Riley a ring. Life will be a great deal happier for him when I tell him who's coming down to see him.
Police headquarters. Lieutenant Riley speaking.
Oh, Riley, I have a surprise for you.
I already got one, Nick. You know what was pulled off not half an hour ago?
I do. You found Mrs. Dudley Banks and her maid bundled up in a closet, and the butler shot to death. Probably the wall safe had been cleaned out, and Mrs. Dudley Banks' prized collection of rubies is missing.
Nick, how come you...
Very simple, Riley. Katie had liver for supper tonight, see? And, hey, put on those lights again. Don't try anything.
Hey, Nick.
Okay, Reba. Turn the lights on.
What's going on, Dick?
There's a gun.
Hey, what's all that noise?
You stay put, right where you are.
Okay, Scully, just as you say.
Good work, babe. You turned these lights on just at the right time. You better pick up the table and put that phone back.
Okay. Lightfoot was just behind me. I figured we'd have a better chance in the dark. You're awful quick, Scully.
You're too quick for that copper. He didn't get a chance to spill anything to Riley. We ain't in the picture at all, and we won't be either.
I was pretty scared for a minute. Hey, where's Sabin?
We're meeting. I had Jake bring me here to get you.
Oh.
He's waiting for us downstairs. Now, you ready to travel?
Sure, I've been ready for the past hour. Thought it was you at the door when this dick knocked. That's why I opened it so quick.
Yeah, let's get going.
Hey, ain't you going to take care of that flatfoot before we leave?
Not here. The one these dead dicks found with the bulls, they might happen to tie you up with it and maybe hook me in, too. Yeah, just take him along with us for a while. And keep Riley guessing, too.
Oh, mighty nice of you to take me along to meet Sabin, Scully. Then I'll have all three of you together in one place where it'll be easier to take you in. You know, Riley'd hate to see you leave town now.
Cut the comedy, copper. You're going along, but not far. So pick up your hat, big boy, and march yourself downstairs. And don't forget, I'll be right behind you, all the way.
Okay, Scully. You're the boss, now that you've got my gun. Oh, don't forget your cat, Reba.
Gosh, that's right. I almost did. Come on, Fluffy.
Hey, where'd that thing come from?
It's mine. Isn't she a dear? Picked her up today. Just couldn't resist her.
You gonna drag that along with you?
Sure, I can't leave her behind. She won't be any trouble.
Okay, let's get going. I don't want to keep Jake waiting. Anybody bother you while you was waiting, Jake?
Nah. Say, who was that with you, Scully?
Yeah, one of Riley's bloodhounds. You sit up in front with Jake, Reba.
Okay.
Right. But, Dick. Hey, what's happened, Scully?
What's he doing here? Jake, get going. Yeah, we're behind schedule now on account of this guy.
Okay, but I don't like it. You ought to get rid of him.
We will, when the time comes. Hey, look, Gumshoes. How come you happened to drop in on Reba tonight?
Just a hunch.
Yeah?
Yeah. Funny how things break, isn't it? You see, it all started when Katie had liver for supper.
You said that before. What about it?
So here we are, the three of us. Funny, isn't it?
Yeah, I can't stop laughing.
What's so funny, Scully?
Just a dick. He knows the answers.
I'll tell you when the time comes. But first, let's find Sabin.
Yeah, there's the place, Scully. The garage here.
Yeah, pull right inside. Sabin will be waiting there for us.
Right.
you, Scully?
Yeah.
Hey, where you been? If we don't get upstate before morning, we're going to be... Hey, who's that with you?
Keep your shirt on and close the garage doors before some fool cop shows up and begins asking questions.
Yeah, okay.
Come over here, Saban.
Yeah?
I want to show you a prize package I picked up tonight. A real live bloodhound straight from Riley's kennels.
Him? How'd he get into the picture?
Walked in on his own 2 feet.
Well, he won't go out that way. They'll have to carry him when we get through with him.
Yeah, that's what I've been telling him. But it don't seem to worry him none.
What's the use of worrying? I can't do anything about it. Yet.
Not yet or ever, copper. You're a dead duck. Give Jake the gun, Scully. He can stay here and hold it on the gumshoe. You and Reba come into the house with me a minute.
Okay, Saban. Here, Jake. Keep this pointed at that dick's heart.
Yeah.
I have to laugh when I think it's his own gun that's keeping him quiet.
He'll keep quiet, all right. But something's going to happen to him. Hey, how long are you going
to
be gone?
Just a couple of minutes. We'll be right back. Everything's all set to go as soon as we finish what we got to do.
Okay, but don't forget we got a long way to go yet tonight.
We forgot. You just keep your eye on the copper till we get back.
It's a pleasure. Hey, can I knock him off?
Not yet. Wait till we get a ways out of town. Then you can finish him any way you like.
You hear that, copper? You and me is going to have fun. I don't like cops, and I'm going to take it all out on you.
I'm sure that'll be great fun.
Yeah? You won't think so. Hey, Dick, don't start moving. Stay where you're on that back seat now. One more move, and I'll plug you.
Scully said not to shoot, Dick. There might be cops around.
You come any closer, I'll let you have it, cops or no cops.
Remember, Jake, cops.
I warn you. I've been...
You must have a gun of your own somewhere, ain't you? Yeah, there it is. Now, my friend, I feel a little better. I'll just put this piece of wire around your wrists. And around your ankles. And slip this rag in your mouth. Tie it back here. There. Now, I don't think you'll bother me any. And I'm going to have my hands full in a few minutes. I'm going to take you and your 3 pals back to Riley. Now, I'll just go over here and stand behind this door. And when they come back, I'll be a one-man welcoming party. Okay. Come on, you lugs. I'm waiting.
Well, Mr. Copper, you're about to take your last ride. I hope you... Saban, look.
What is it?
Jake's out cold.
If it's broken loose, look out.
Up with your hands, all of you.
Hey, where'd
you get those bags and get your hands in the air. Maybe fast, Saban, but not that fast.
Hey, don't shoot, don't shoot. You know I ain't got no gun.
Just have another look to make sure. Now, you're clean. Now I'll just take Saban's gun. I'll make sure he doesn't have another one on him anyway. He's clean, too. Now, keep those hands where I can see them, Reba.
I just want to get a handkerchief out of my handbag.
All right. But no tricks.
Can't a girl use her own handkerchief when she has a blow?
Sorry to have to sock you in the jaw, lady. Suppose I might have known you'd have a gun in your handbag. All right, you two. Pick her up and put her in the back of the car. Then get in yourself. Scully, you drive. Saban, you're sitting back with Reba and me. Just push Jake over, Scully. He won't bother you. All right, get going.
Okay, okay.
Then we'll all drive down and surprise Lieutenant Riley. Won't that be fun?
And after they left you alone with Jake, then what?
Well, Patsy, when the three of them went into the house, I knew the chance I'd been waiting for had come. Mm-hmm. I was in the back seat, and Jake was in the front seat holding my gun on me.
Mm-hmm.
So I got up out of my seat, moved over to Jake, took the gun away from him, and punched him in the jaw. He went out like a light.
Nick, you moved up on a man holding a pistol on you? Why in the world didn't he kill you? Sounds to me like a hairbreadth Harry story.
He tried to kill me, all right, Patsy. But he didn't know what I knew. That's why I had the advantage on him.
Now, stop teasing, Nick. Tell me, why in the world didn't he shoot you?
As I said, Patsy, he tried to. But the gun wasn't loaded.
Wasn't loaded?
No. That's why I felt perfectly safe in just taking it away from him. Patsy, you should have seen the look on his face when he pointed the gun at my heart and pulled the trigger 3 times.
But I thought you said it was your gun.
He did, Patsy.
And it wasn't loaded?
No, Patsy. With shame and remorse, I admit it wasn't loaded. You see, when Scully jumped on me in Reba's apartment, I tried to shoot him with it. But the trigger simply clicked. Then I suddenly remembered that I'd been cleaning it the night before when I got that long-distance phone call. And I just forgot to load it again.
That's a dangerous mistake to make, Nick, even if it did save your life this time.
Quite right, Patsy, quite right. Well, I certainly had a lot of fun watching Scully pointing that empty gun at me all the time we were going to meet Saban. You know, I really enjoyed it. I wish all my mistakes could turn out as well.
This has been another of the strange adventures of Nick Carter, Master Detective, which are brought to you regularly by WOR Mutual. Well, Nick, what's next week's story going to be about?
Before I tell you that, John, there's something else I want to say. Something very special. And this is addressed to you, our audience. We've been with you every week for the past year now, bringing you the strange and exciting adventures of Nick Carter. And now I'm very happy to be able to announce that beginning next Monday, April 17th, we're going to have the pleasure of being with you five times a week. 5 quarter hours a week, Mondays through Fridays at 9:15 p.m. Eastern Wartime, over most of these stations. And I assure you that we're looking forward to these meetings with you very eagerly. So remember, we won't be back Saturday nights anymore. But we will be here every evening, Monday through Friday, at 9:15 Eastern Wartime, beginning this coming Monday, April 17th. And we hope you'll be with us as regularly in the future as you have been in the past.
Gee, Nick, that's swell, isn't it? 5 times a week. And do we have a lot of exciting stories to tell?
You bet we do, Patsy. A lot of really exciting cases. And I think we'll start next Monday with a story which I call Kidnapped for Sale.
Or The Mystery of the Missing Babies.
Have you heard of the latest racket? Stealing young babies from their parents, not for ransom, but to sell them to people who want the baby for their own? Well, it's one of the dirtiest and lowest forms of kidnapping found in the underworld today.
And when a young mother who'd lost her baby came to Nick for help, he was glad of the chance to break up the kidnap ring and catch the fiends who stole innocent and helpless children and then sold them to the highest bidders.
So if you want to be in on the beginning of one of the most exciting chases I've ever had, listen next Monday evening at 9:15 Eastern Wartime to the story Kidnapped for Sale. So long, everybody.
So long.
And so long to both of you, Nick and Patsy. In the strange adventure you have just heard, Nick Carter was impersonated by Lon Clark, Patsy by Helen Choate, Lieutenant Riley by Humphrey Davis. Original music was played by Lou White. The entire production was written and directed by Jock McGregor. Next Monday evening at 9:15 Eastern Wartime, listen to the beginning of another curious experience of Nick Carter entitled
Kidnapped for Sale, or Nick Carter and the Mystery of the Missing Babies.
This is Mutual.
That's Case Closed for this week. I'll be back next Wednesday with more. Between now and then, you can find past episodes of this show, more old-time radio, and everything else Relic Radio at relicradio.com. You'll also find links there to our forum, Shoutcast stream, and our donate button if you'd like to help support it all. Thanks, as always, to those who have. Thanks for joining me today. I'll talk to you again next Wednesday with another episode of Case Closed. Case Closed is produced by and for relicradio.com. Rebroadcast of this show without permission is strictly prohibited.